Hi, welcome to episode number 199 of the Applelog Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Head, and I am sick. I have the flu. It's Sunday night, and I'm putting the episode out tomorrow. Today's podcast is brought to you in part by BetterHelp.com. You can get affordable private online counseling anytime, anywhere. Talk with a licensed professional therapist online today, and you can get a 7-day free trial with the code word Applelog when you go to BetterHelp.com/Applelog. And go do that. I'd like to thank everybody shopping on Amazon. It's been very helpful to the show. You too can help the show out by going to applelog.ca/Amazon, applelog.ca/US Amazon, or do it the old-fashioned way by going to applelog.ca. Click on those banners located on the right side. Locate your country, where you're either from Canada, the United States, or the UK. Bookmark those links, and every time you shop on Amazon, you can use those links and shop and support the show. Cost you no extra money. I would like to thank everybody who goes to Patreon. You too can help the show out on a monthly basis by going to patreon.com/Applelog. Pledge as much or as little as you want to help with hosting and gas fees, and you can cancel at any time. Go buy a t-shirt if you go to applelog.ca/shop. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes. Give it 5 stars, please. Like the show on Facebook by going to facebook.com/Applelog Pod. Follow me on Twitter at SimonHead666. Today on the show is an old friend, Will McGurk, who is a journalist. He is he's got this TV show called The Renaissance Man, which is on Bell 5, which you can watch online. He manages a bookstore up here in my hometown, and went over to the place. It's literally 2 minutes from my house, set up in the back shop of this bookstore, Blue Huron Books, and you'll hear the sound. It sounds kind of awesome in there, actually. Here is my friend, Will McGurk, on the Applelog Podcast, episode number 199, by the way. You've been on the show before.
Yes, I have.
You've been on this show twice.
Have I really?
Yeah. First wow. time you were on was very early in the season of this show. It was like episode not even 20?
Really?
I'm into 200 now.
I'm always the new guy. Why is that?
199 yeah. now I've done.
Wow, man. That's
every
great.
Week. Well, I skipped last week because I was too busy.
Who's your favorite so far? You don't have to say me.
There's been so many. There's been ones where you go, I don't know. It's kind of like, I don't know the person. Like a publicist hooked us up and you're like, I think this will be okay. And then it turns into amazing. Mm-hmm. And then there's sometimes you expect more and get nothing. And I'm sure you know what I mean. Like as a journalist, you think, I'm going to get so much information out mm-hmm. of this person. This is going to be the best interview ever.
Yeah.
And then it turns into just sour meh.
Yeah, and sometimes you can end up quite the opposite, where you've got like 10 minutes with somebody, and you just make a connection weirdly over something, and then they just keep waving off the publicists, and you get talked to them for like 40 minutes or an hour, which has happened to me once, yeah. And it was amazing. We just like ended up chatting away and exchanging emails and being total friends, and like you never follow up on any of that stuff, no. right? But it was just kind of like, yeah, I'll see you tomorrow, man. It was great. Thanks
for the
Facebook
much. False promise. Yeah, that's what does. Yeah. yeah, we're totally gonna hang out. We're best friends, right?
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I'm saying that's not even like me saying we're now buds. Yeah, it's the other person, right?
Yeah, like, there's
oh,
been
that's sweet.
Yeah, and every time like because I'm new, kind of new to the game. I'm not as new as I was like 3 years ago. But when I first started, I had no idea. I've been interviewed a few times, but I've never actually been the interviewer. Mm-hmm. So you learn so many neat things about just trying to open up people, and I'm not good at it. You know what I mean? I'm still not there, and it always clicks. When it clicks, there's always like, it's really good to hear what people who get interviewed all the time to go, hey, that was good, mm-hmm. thanks. You know what I mean? Or that was breath of fresh air or something. You know? So it's always, that's the rewarding part when you sort of come out of it going, oh, okay, I guess I... You know, naivety is some sort of term of like, you know what I mean? If there's no expectations, then there's no, problems.
Well, when did I graduate from journalism school? 2014. And prior to that, I was just writing and talking to people and then writing down what they were talking about. We're drinking coffee at the moment, if you hear anything.
That's right. Brought in some Tim Hortons.
Because it's super late in the evening. And we've both been up super early. And we've had very, very long days.
Got myself out of bed, just out of my sick bed. I had
you all think all this, like flu. Nighthawks are like, oh, I was rolled out of bed about 5 o'clock. It's like, no, we're at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. So you came up, and got this job, because you're in my town. Like, we're in my hometown. This is where I live. And you've worked up here for how long now?
What I like to call Bucksbridge. I'm calling it Bucksbridge from now on. I started in July.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I started in July. And it's, so was it September, 3 months, July, August, September. I think I'm getting the hang of it. It's outside. It's, you know, what I've normally sort of done. It's the most work that I've actually ever done, but it's enjoyable. So I still don't consider it work. I was in here for this Springtide Festival, which I came up to see because my buddy Rory Talon was playing it. So I came up. And I do know like lots and lots of people who live up in the Uxbridge area and North Durham as well. A lot of musicians and artists live up here. It's a sweet spot. And so I came up and ran into Shelley McBeth is the owner of the store. And we got talking and we had a beer or two. We were talking about music, big music fan she is, and I'm possibly bringing vinyl into the shop on some level. Yeah, so that's where it started, and then we had further conversations, and then while we were having conversations about that, the manager at the time had left. So Shelley was looking for a manager.
Yeah.
So I, you know, being as facetious as I always am, I just put my hand up and said, I'll do it, right? And then it was a couple of weeks later, I was still at the Toronto Star at this time, and then a couple of weeks later, Shelley called and said, remember that conversation? Were you serious? And I was like, you know what? I think I was. Mm-hmm. And she goes, well, let's do it. So she did the whole like interview and all those bits and pieces, and she had other candidates. And then she called me and said, if you want it, it's yours. And I was like, sweet, a bookstore. Are you kidding me? It's fucking awesome. Pardon my language.
I was thinking about it on the way over. Like, you've written so many words, and you've made a living out of creating sentences that now they're filled in surrounding you, like they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And so to become a manager, to the manager of the bookstore, you get to change so many directions and sort of how, not just how the store is run, but the direction of how whatever you bring in, or is that, so you have conversations because there's so many books in that store, it's not chapters where you can put every book under the sun there.
No.
You have to be
curated, and I take no credit for that at all. I order books occasionally for most of this, and it's been going on for like about 12 years. Shelley had it's been around for about 30 years. The bookstore itself is super well known. It won, I believe, best independent bookstore in North America like 5 years I think in a row. So it's already super like established. It's a thing, and it's a community hub. And people are very fond of it. They're very fond of Shelley, and she does like a great job of curating it, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, it does, you know, it harkens back to our pal Mike Starr, like for Starr Records.
Oh, yeah.
Where you kind of knew that Mike knew I had touched every single one of those records and brought them in for a reason, you know? And that's kind of with this bookstore. You come in, I was talking to somebody earlier today, and I was saying, you know, we might not have the book you want, but we can probably get you the book you need.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
You know, it's that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And so people come in, they look for something, and we may have it. We can do orders. We do online ordering, and we do obviously in-store ordering. People come in and pick them up. And also, like, you know, we'll wander around and just have conversations with people and say, you know, okay, you're looking at this, but have you thought about this? What about this direction? And so in a way, pardon me, you are still nudging people in a certain sort of direction, you know, and we do support a lot of local stuff, and we do support local authors, and because we now have vinyl, I'm putting the call out to local musicians from Durham Region. I've talked to a few of them to say, listen, we want to have your record in here, you know. I'd like this place to be a destination for local musicians. So when people are saying, I really like Rory Talon again. We've got his records, Standard Electric, just came in, and Matt Gunn, who's a Uxbridge guy, really cool cat. We just had a bit of a release show for him on Thursday, and so his records are here. So it's kind of a case of, you know how it is. If you want to buy my record, you got to come to my show, right?
Yeah.
Right? Well, now you don't have to go to the show, right? You can actually come here. You're going to, like, we'll be that depot for those records. That's kind of the direction that I'd like to put it in.
And it, while you're saying this, it reminds me of, like, a record store from the 80s or from the 70s that you would get in, like, a Mike Starr. You'd go in and go, what's good? Oh, check out this new record from the Ramones, or check out this Black Flag record, or check this out, and people would be turned on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same part. I mean, that's kind of lost today.
Yeah.
No, it's totally lost. I mean, like, come on.
There's little pockets.
It's there, but this is hearkening back to, and I like the fact that younger folk can come in here and understand what it was like 30 years ago to come buy a book or a record, and to appreciate the knowledge of an elder or someone who knows books or puts all these books in a shop for you to look at, for you to walk away with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, to me, is such a great thing. In the town of Uxbridge, this downtown core, since we've been here 12 years, it's changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say for the better part. I mean, it seems less clicky. Does that make a, you know, because there's places down the road that used to, like, the old computer store where you go in there and have nothing. And then the music store across the street by the coffee time.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Go to buy a snare skin. Oh, I don't have any of those. Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll go to Long & McQuaid's then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this is, like, obviously it's been here for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole area seems to have been, I don't know. It's improved. I mean,
I'm not that familiar with the town. Like I said, I have been up here and I've been to this store before, and I've worked with Shelley and many of the artists up here on various different projects. You know, even down in Oshawa, when I was doing some work with Durham Tourism, I was meeting a whole bunch of people up in the north as well. But actually coming in and just spending like a day and hanging out in Uxbridge, not anything I ever really sort of did. It was like just destination. Come to the bookstore. You know, I'm out. But we can play sort of tourist guide and come to Uxbridge. It's the trail capital of Canada.
One might think that Jasper National Park might be the trail capital of Canada.
Yeah.
But turns out
Uxbridge
is.
Uxbridge, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, they got a lot of nice walking paths and a lot of nice bicycle paths.
Yeah, and they got that, like, Foster Memorial.
Yep.
It's they've got the Lucy Maud Montgomery house, the museum. They've got the Second Wedge Brewery, which is just up the road. And you could come here and you could actually probably spend a couple of days, like, exploring this corner.
Mm-hmm.
And Uxbridge is one of those places, but the amount of time and work and energy that, you know, myself and a whole bunch of other people have put into some places in the south to try and get them a little bit more sort of like, let's get a little bit more music or a little bit more art, you know, like, it's good stuff.
People are just thirsty for it up here.
Yeah, for sure. You know what I mean? Like, it's like now we've got all these sort of ideas and stuff that we have done down there.
Yeah.
But the audience is up here as well as the artists, you know. So I think there is real possibility to have a bit of fun and build some stuff.
We have a salt cave. Yeah, people go into. There's a salt cave just down the road by Pizza.
Really?
And in the back, there's like this salt cave that they've made. And I went to buy one of those, you know, those lamps that get rid of all the bad mojo?
Yeah.
I got one of those and she goes, have you seen our salt cave? I'm like, no, I haven't. So go in, take my shoes off. I look at it and it was like, I don't think I'd like to sit in here. It seems a little damp.
I mean, all the bad mojo.
All the bad mojo is getting sucked out.
Yeah. Like,
could you imagine the people living in the apartment above? Completely just sucking all the mojo. Just, ugh. But it was...
It'd be so dry, man.
But it's a neat spot, and they say
crusty.
That Hayden Christensen comes in, and he salts here.
And I do believe that he's been in our shop.
He must have been a few times.
Yeah. We do have... Some well-known people living in this area, and they do drop into the shop occasionally.
Yeah. You get a little...
No. Because, you know, we're journalists, man. We're just after the story.
That's right. No, I'd be a little starstruck.
Yeah.
Loved you in Star Wars, man.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't come in while I've been here, but
okay.
I did say it to my sons, and they're like, oh my God, Anakin was in your shop. And I'm like,
yes, he was.
Yeah.
He's buying a Star Wars comic.
But,
so, yeah. So every time I see you, you're doing something a little bit different.
Yeah.
And you're doing something that seems exciting to me. And it's also, you know, we're about the same age.
Yeah.
I think we're about the same age.
Nah, I'm way older, buddy.
I'm older than you.
Oh, I'm way older.
How old are you?
I'm like 53.
I'm not sure. I'm 48.
Yeah, it's like 5 years.
Nah, I know, but that's...
Well, not now. We're the same age.
In high school, maybe.
That was huge.
In high school, there's a big difference.
Yeah, I would.
But now we're about the same age.
Yeah.
But I find it inspiring that there's neat things to do always, and you've sort of opened my eyes a few times when you're like, oh, I'm doing this now, I'm doing that. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, because it is inspiring for people to understand that in this world where things seem sometimes a little cut off, you know, like when it comes to gaining knowledge, it's there and it's not there. Like you can, you know what I mean? But to get wiser and more experienced as a person and growing as a person, that's always something that people, it just happens, right?
It's, I don't know. It's just like this curiosity. And again, when I did come over from Dublin, I mean, I sort of an old punk rocker and outsider and in some way purposefully outside.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I came here and I just want to know what this country is about. So for me personally, it's just been, I'm going there because I want to know what that is, you know? And then, I had the opportunity of being able to talk about that stuff and in some way that, you know, however I present myself, that becomes something that other people are interested in reading or watching or looking at or listening to or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of cool. But then what the great thing about that is that then you've got like an audience, right? And it's really cool to be able to say to the audience, okay, what's your story? What's my story? Let's figure out where we can get the connections and build stuff together, right? Mm-hmm. And create platforms and, you know, turn walls into galleries and floors into stages, right? I mean, like all across the place, right? I mean, that's kind of one of the things, because I'm like, oh man, like I go to Hillside and this is one of the best festivals ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back and this was a few years ago. I was like, man, we got to do something like that around here. I want to do that here, you know? Mm-hmm. So we made something similar many years ago. And even growing up, you know, I worked at a magazine for a while, and it was actually, the magazine was above a bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, I've always been a reader, and so like then you're kind of like, how can I just want to figure out a way of talking about books to people or writing about it or creating something for authors. All of that has been kind of like woven into all these years, but I've been curious about Canadian authors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, this thing comes along, and it really was, it was just something that I just couldn't say no to, you know, because the opportunity of being in this space and saying to myself, you know what, I mean, I could stay at the Star, work on a computer, you know, do the production work that I was doing. I was doing some sales work when I quit, and I could probably do that for the rest of my life. But at 53, I was kind of like, no, you know what, I need a job where I have to stand up. I'm old. I probably need to do a little bit more physical exercise. I need something to keep my head going. I need to learn new stuff, you know? And this is the whole thing about coming into this bookshop. I'm not retail at all, never really been. So I have to learn, I have to study, I have to dig in, I have to figure out how this works.
Yeah, the culture of everything is completely ingrained for 30 years, you say, right?
That's so right, pardon me.
They've done something right. They're not going to put some asshole in charge.
Well, I think they may have. I think they may have. I mean, ultimately, it's the get out of jail card. It's like, well, you made a decision, you hired me.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, right? So it's a challenge, you know? And that, I think, is kind of interesting in itself. It's that when the world doesn't give you those challenges, I mean, first of all, if they do take them, just say yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then challenge yourself. Like the Woolly Took magazine, which is something that, you know, we were involved in a long time ago.
Yeah.
It was a case of, I didn't think at that time that the media in Durham was paying the right attention to the right people. So I decided to see if I could do it myself, you know?
And you did.
And I did, you know, we did it for a few years and we grew up like on that stuff. And then we got to meet people, but then we get to figure out your journey and their journey and follow everybody else's journey all along, you know?
Yeah,
and
nobody realized how important that is until a few years go by.
Yeah.
And they realize that holy crap, there were somebody holding the flag for our town.
Yeah.
Especially with arts and culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been doing it for 30-something years.
Yeah, I know.
But for me, that's... Yeah. I find that to be wildly fascinating because you could easily... You know, I'm closed now.
Yeah, you can take
what you want out of it and walk away. Kind of what I do. I take what I need.
Yeah.
I try to put something back, but I always get what I need first. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then there's people like you who put it in and always pay it in and always pay it in and to try to make something work on its own as its own surviving force.
Mm-hmm.
That is harder to do. It's like starting a band from nothing and becoming and being... being Guns N' Roses at the end of it, you know, and looking and saying, we've turned into Bon Jovi. the ride in between is somehow like, how did I get here? Or how did this happen? But you've kind of like to make something and start it from nothing is sort of the main part of this show. I mean, it's sort of like you've made art and you've brought it out of thin air and here it is and you've brought it to the people. What do you need? You know what I mean? What else is there?
What else would you do, though, man? Like, I mean, like, what, like, why else, you know? So, one of the things, and not, you know, promotion or anything like that, but we talked earlier about off this mic, the TV show that I'm involved in, and so it's 6 mini episodes, 10 minutes each, where I sort of discuss and get educated by a variety of different artists from Oshawa, And one of the things that I had to write a poem. Yeah, so a spoken word, right? And I'm like, I'm a poet. I can do this. I've been a writer of my life for years. No problem, right? But it turned out to be way more difficult, which is the end of every show. It's like, oh my God, that was actually way more difficult than I thought. But what it was, the poem itself, and then I had to do this other drawing too with Danny Crosby, who's awesome. So that's another episode. But what it was in those discussions with people, it's kind of like this, Simon. It was kind of like, you know, you look back and I was writing this poem about, you know, here we are in a city of makers and I've been sort of making things, but there's nothing to show for it. There's nothing concrete. Aside from probably the Glenn Bensley Walk of Fame, the star that we have, there's nothing else that is tangible. I didn't even keep the Woolly
Toots. It's all come and gone.
It's all like, you know, like, you know what I mean? So it's very sort of, it can get you down. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, cause it's such a struggle to do stuff in Oshawa in that way. So, you know, you're just going, oh my God, Christ, city just drives me nuts. You know, I mean, we just lost the Mustache Club, which is like the worst thing ever.
Yeah. That's the hub. Yeah. It literally is in the center of Oshawa.
Yeah. So you're kind of done, but here's the thing in talking to those things. And just like what you're saying, you get to sort of look back and it's not anything at all, really. But it is kind of like, it's like you kind of see that you have made some difference to some people in some ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And sometimes it's the kid that you gave the very first gig to, you know, and they look back, and or maybe it's the kid that you wrote their very first story.
Or
right?
You gave them a sort of, hey, you should try this, or here's an idea.
Yeah, or here's, you know, I know, you know, somebody's like, oh, I want to get a show, and it's like, I know some people, let's get your show, right? And that's the kind of stuff. So and you build up all those connections, and then you get to use them to enable somebody else. You get to, those connections, build a network. That network gets tighter and tighter, so it becomes a platform you can stand on, and then you can use that to elevate other people. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. So things like myself, you know, I'm super comfortable about talking about these things, but like all those little junctions, you know, at the beginning of the dungeon, you know, like I was involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
The little art gallery, the vault and stuff like that, I was involved with that down in Oshawa. The magazine, like the Woolly Took, right? There's another magazine I'm involved in called Wonderlit, which is a young kid wanted to start something about comics and graphics and tattoo artists and just figured out a way of documenting that. And he came to me and I was like, I think I know a way of doing this, right? Mm-hmm. So now we're on the third edition of that, Wonderlit. Then the kids who came to me and they were talking about this TV show that they wanted to do. And they were like, yeah, we really want to like focus on Oshawa artists. And I was like, yeah, okay, well, I know some, so let me make some phone calls, right? Mm-hmm. There was one time when we said, like, we wanted to shoot the poetry one in the library, but we can't get permission to, you know, get into the library to do this. So many channels you have to go through. And I was like, let me make a phone call, right? You know what I mean? And we got it in like 15 minutes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because that's the stuff. That's the legacy. That's the trust. That's the stuff. That's what, you know, that's what you have. And that comes from 30 odd years of doing stuff.
Yeah.
And failing, but still going.
Exactly. The failing part is what I was going to say, that failing isn't the part. It's failing is the part, that's what I'm not going to do next time. Mm-hmm. And then you put a bunch of stuff in your tool bag about how you are going to approach any project. And it all comes from the same premise of enthusiasm, and it comes from, I need to know how this works, and I need to know how it can help what the cause I'm trying to prop up, or what I'm trying to move along. But it all comes from that same orb of enthusiasm that then you can then, I guess, emote to whoever is around you. And that's essentially, as a mentor, that's what mentors
kind of
do, right?
Yeah. You become that without really sort of thinking about it. I'm still somewhat like creative, you know? I still like to make things. And I think if you think of your own sort of life journey in terms of you're just making it, you know, you're just making it. Mm-hmm. So I don't really think about monetizing it. I don't really think about figuring out whether the show I'm going to do with the Zoo Bombs is going to be successful. Right. I mean, I try to do the best I can so they can get some dollars. But for me, like for me personally, it's just the doing of it that makes sense.
And that makes you different than other promoters slash people who are, I don't know. I don't have the word for it, but it's not venture capitalist of art of sort. You know what I mean? But it's some sort of like.
Well, I did have a day job that kind of paid the bills while I was off.
Yeah, I know. That's
playing,
true. Yeah. You know? And, you know, I'm with you with that too, because as I've gotten older, it's turned into a, who can I help?
Yeah.
Because it makes me feel good that I'm helping them, because I'm in a position where I can actually help now, as opposed to, I need to pay my mortgage. I need to, this is my life. And, and so when I, back in the day when I took things way too seriously, there was a lot of angst, you know. And as you get older, you start realizing, that doesn't make good art.
Well, you turn 50, buddy. You won't care about anything.
Turn 50 up here, man. I actually, the other day, someone asked how old I was. I was like, 48, 49? I don't know. I don't know how old I am. You forget.
I think I was born 50. I'm just getting into myself now. You know, it's kind of that. And that's the other thing about this bookstore, which is really sweet, you know. Like the Blue Herons, like I said, I don't know if we were talking here just off mic about Matt Gunn coming in on Thursday and doing his in-store.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of little kids who came in to see it, about like 12 people. I think he stole like about 12 records. Mm-hmm. Like he sold that many, which is not bad for his own stuff. And but I'm talking to the kids and I'm like, you know, like, what do you think? What are you after? What's missing in your life? What do you think you want to do? And how can this piece of architecture right here become something that's valuable to you, you know? Now, obviously, we got to pay bills and sell books and all that sort of stuff and make money.
It's a long game.
It is, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, but at the same time, I think in a way, like it's building another community. And what they need may not be something that this bookstore can provide, but having those conversations, that's what this bookstore has enabled me to do. Me being here gives me that opportunity to talk to people about stuff, you know, and get involved in the community up here. And that's what I'm looking forward to. First, I have to learn this, you know, and then it'll be a case of, okay, what's going on in Uxbridge, man? Let's do some stuff up here. Let's make this place
historically happen. Speaking, Uxbridge has been a place where things kind of get started and then people it doesn't come to fruition. It's always sort of like half-baked.
Yeah.
You know, my big idea when I moved up here is I'm going to put on all-ages shows over at the music theater of the 300. I'm going to do shows, all-ages shows. Well, that turned out to be a colossal pain in the ass to try and do.
Were you working with, was Crush Luther? Was that one of the...
No, I was working at the time, I was trying to get, like, what are they called? Bombs Over Providence. Trying to get them to come up and play a show, because they were just... When I first moved, they had just put this big record out.
Yeah,
I'm trying to do an all ages show, and I spoke to somebody over in by the arena who deals with the booking of the place, and then they're like, "Oh yeah, it's the thing." Mm-hmm. Then I tried to get the Memorial, Foster Memorial, same thing.
Oh, I had a show in there.
I know you were telling me about it last time we were on the show. I was trying to get a recording session up there. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get, and as soon as I mentioned drums, they're like, that's." But it's, and then I met somebody where my new job, somebody named Maggie, who works at Richmond Hill but lives in Oxford, who is sort of like a community staple point around this area.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I know all those people. I can get you. I can just make, you know what I mean? She's another one of you type of person who lives in this town who can make open doors. And that's the thing about smaller towns and communities, especially when it deals with giving out something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like there's a, okay, let's ask questions first. And how are we going to get this happening? And how are we going to get this going? And once you've gained their trust, you know, that's it. And one thing I do regret is not becoming a little bit more of a staple or some part of this community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have my own, I live 3 minutes from here, but I go to work, I come home, I watch TV, and then we go watch a movie. And then, but there's so many community events we did, you know, that we could do that we could become more involved.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's society in a way has become a little bit more less involved within the community and more involved in themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, that's neither, like, you either go with that, you know what I mean, and say, oh my God, like, the kids are like that. It's just a write-off, you know, or you just say, like, stuff changes, you know, it doesn't have to stay the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the kids are spending all their time on iPads, you know, does not really mean anything except that kids are spending all their time on iPads in the same way as we spend all our time and money on records, you know? Like, we weren't, you know, planning on jobs. We were just, like, trying to get money from somewhere.
Yeah.
Just so we can get the next record. You know what I mean? Like, so that being in the moment, which is what the kids are doing at the moment, like, at these times, you know, isn't necessarily a bad thing. And I was teaching up at Durham College for a while, so I did...
Oh, that.
I did that, too.
That was, over the past how many years now? Like, I haven't seen you in 2 or 3 years. You've done eight things.
Oh, I know, man. It's nuts. And I had a day job. but I was talking to kids, and I'm like, they're so smart, man. They're so smart. They know so much. They, like, I mean, we, you know, us punks and back to the boomers and all of it, true, cause a few problems on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the kids, this next generation, this younger generation, have the smarts to be able to figure it out and deal with it.
I totally agree. I think the age group from 1980s to whatever, the millennials, let's call them, I think that's a generation of their parents that were mistreated in the 70s and now trying to make up for lost time. And I think when those people start having kids, they're going to have hopefully a gentle balance of what's right and what's wrong, and therefore be able to create a better bunch of people who aren't assholes to each other. You know what I mean? Like, that to me would be, that'd be amazing.
It's and they have access to so much, you know what I mean? So I have children, I have three boys, and, you know, damn it, they have everything they want, right, available to them, no matter, you know, through the internet. And I'll turn the internet off at home, they can go somewhere else, right? I'm like, I'll turn off your phone. They can just go somewhere else and get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know all the information, you're like, oh my God, I don't want them to see that, I don't want them to talk about that, you know, whatever, all that stuff. But at the same time, I think the role of the parent kind of changes a bit now, rather than being a censor. You have to turn into an educator. You have to put things in context.
Oh yes,
you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Build it out and say, okay, so yeah, you watch that, and then, you know, it's a bit odd, and, you know, but here's the other stuff around it, so that you're not, like, totally traumatized.
You
by
can't,
it or
and
whatever.
If you try to completely shelter your child, that child will turn into a monster.
Yeah,
it's true. I grew up with people like that.
Yeah,
whose parents wouldn't let them go out after 8, or, you know, and then turned into, like, maybe straight edge kids or. You know what I mean? They're the most reckless, crazy people I know.
Yeah.
Because they just did not get the yah-yahs out when they were supposed to.
Yeah, yeah.
And now here they are, grown adults, like, angry and freaked out. And
they just don't know how to behave.
Yeah.
Right? Because they, you know, they just never learned it. They never got that peer, the peer sort of stuff. And that's a cool thing about all ages shows too, right? Mm-hmm. Especially like The Dungeon.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because that's like totally unsupervised space for the kids to figure out their own stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And that's somewhat lacking at the moment, you know. Kids having their own space where it's not in the car with their parents and then in the school with the teachers and off to the, you know, football practice or something with coaches or off to dancing, you know, with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have that in-between space, you know.
Yeah.
where it's just you unsupervised, you know? And I know it sounds a bit odd and whatever like that.
It's true, though. You understand what social boundaries are.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know what social boundaries are, you turn into a crazy person.
Like, well, if you never get to test them, you know, I mean, that's the whole point, right? Yeah. I mean, you got to like kick them out of the nest a little. Maybe it's just a dad thing, but you got to kick them out of the nest a little bit so they can kind of figure it out. You're not too far away.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
You know, but you know, you got to push them out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They keep coming back.
I always said parenting should have, for lack of a better term, just a little bit of shame involved. Just a little bit. Just enough to go, just that. Yeah. That tone alone is like, really?
Sometimes you don't even have to say it. You just have to do the look. You just like.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Really?
Really? You're going to go there? Just enough just to go, oh, that's, but we mean that's not right. What do you mean I can't stay up till 4 a.m. playing video games?
Yeah,
you
know I mean? Man. Yeah. Even though we stayed up till like 5.
Oh,
like,
yeah. No, well, we are hypocrites. I mean, being a parent is basically, I think, Latin for hypocrite, isn't it?
Well, I think it's like it's a fear of the unknown, right? And here's the thing, though, is that, I mean, the unknown has never been more unknown. The future has never been more unknown. Nobody knows what tomorrow's going to bring.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody. There was a time when we kind of knew what we were going, even though we didn't know the future, obviously.
Well,
but
we were kind of being told.
You kind of had an idea of what your trajectory is going to be, right?
The news told us what was happening.
Yeah. You got all that. And now, I mean,
there's 8 different sources of news with different 8 different agendas.
Yeah.
So therefore, to get the real news, you go into RT.
7 billion.
Yeah. So now you go into RT, like actual Russian TV, to actually get the news, or BBC or something. You know what I mean? Like you can't go to CNN or you can't go to Fox because they all have their own spin on it.
Yeah.
So therefore, the news is no longer the news. It's up to you to go find it. I think there's something coming up on the horizon where they'll have to somehow teach non-biased news broadcasting. Somehow.
I don't know, to be honest with you. I think that something like journalism, which is you know, a big topic these days, I think journalism, because each and every single person now is like, there are 7 billion TV channels. We're all our own media. So we have to start behaving that way. So we have to like challenge ourselves to be journalists, not professionally, but just as a way of life. Seek the truth. So I think journalism should be something that should be taught in high school. You know, it shouldn't be, it's not a profession anymore. It's actually a way of navigating the world.
Yeah.
You need to learn to figure out where the truth is and how to find it, you know?
Yeah, that's very,
So I think that those journalism skills are vital in figuring this out, because we are entering into this weird media landscape. But there are ways of figuring it out. My thing is to look to the artists, which is why I hang out with them all the time, because whatever they're sort of building is going to give you some sort of indication of what the next wave will be, the next world will be that we move into.
Because
they have that influencing and they have that creation and they just create those environments. And so if you know what they're doing, you can understand them. I know I'm getting a bit off.
No, this totally makes sense.
So you need to learn how to like teach your kids to be objective themselves.
Yes.
You know?
And my head's working with you on this one, because I always think trying to predict what the future is mind-numbing. So why not just live now? Like, live with what's happening now, because therefore you can put into what's happened now into, you can't predict what's going to happen from now in the future. You have to sort of always kind of look a little bit back, but also be now. Like, what just happened now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, this happened now. Okay, well, how are we going to get around this now?
Yeah.
As opposed to, you can take it to anything, like, what type of music is going to be successful in 2 years from now? Because I'm an A&R guy, and I need to find some bands. Well, it's going to be this, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go sign 1,000 bands that sound like that.
Yeah.
But you can't predict that.
No.
There is no way. So you have to just live in the now.
Yeah, and the market is so fragmented, you know? And that was the thing, even when doing the entertainment writing, you know, pursuing the idea of... you know, chasing down the big rock stars or trying to get a job, you know, where you're getting to interview like Neil Young or Elton John, which would be awesome, right?
Yeah.
But my thing was like, you know what? I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to go right down as small as you can go and just write about what's happening in my own neighborhood and my own like community, you know? So, and that's the stuff that I've been interested in. And that's what I'm saying about, like, I'm just curious about this space, even as small as it is in Oshawa or up in Uxbridge or Pickering or some. Like, who are those cats and what are they doing? And I've never been bored. I've never been disappointed.
No.
I've had a marvelous musical journey I don't feel as if I've missed out on anything because I've never seen Neil Young live.
Sure.
I've seen Patrick Doherty live and Dan Brooks live. And,
yeah.
And
the
Cranland's
sum of all the small parts make
protest.
For, make for bigger perspective.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're looking at many small things, you can sort of gather the history from there.
Yeah.
And then staple it in.
I got a great metaphor for that, man, because I think we're kind of getting to that at the moment.
Yeah.
So many things are about birds. It's crazy. So you think about like all these fragments, because everything has been disrupted. Everything's been broken. Everything's just like shattered, right? And you've got all these pieces. And, you know, a long time ago, artists were kind of building collages from pieces. It's like they were bringing them all together. But I actually kind of think, like, if how do we navigate all those fragments? And you think about something like a murmuring of starlings, you know, the way like flocks. And all of a sudden, like, oh, they just make these amazing patterns and hundred millions of birds. And they're all like floating around. You got these massive big shapes and stuff. And nobody, at least, I mean, I'm sure somebody does. I don't. Like, how do those birds not bump into each other? Right.
Yeah.
But there's some intuition in those fragments. And collectively, they can make something really, really cool and beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
And I think in that, there's some message for these fragmented lives that we have. We can gather them up correctly and have them sort of communicate in some way. And now I'm getting way deep.
No,
but
man,
anyway,
this is...
you can create all that stuff.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I came to that a long time ago, a big McLuhan fan. So that's where all this stuff comes from. But now I've kind of noticed that like people have these tattoos with like broken up into birds. There's there's authors and writers and all the covers have birds on the front of them. And there's like, you know, there's just this sense of bringing, not like a collage where you had different things, right? But almost like the same thing, like a flock of things, tribes where everybody is kind of the same thing. And how are they going to navigate and negotiate themselves? And can you predict it, you know? Because then you can predict the behavior. And then you can you can get ahead of it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the type of stuff. So I dig all that stuff up and I go check out the artists and figure out who's doing stuff.
Here's another one. Yeah. My friend did a lot of corporate media work. He worked for lots of big corporations. He would say that every single, and this is between 1998 and 5 years ago, if you find logos of a corporation, there's always an oval somehow.
Yeah.
An oval in there somewhere. And you call it the Oval Companies. Oh, it's some oval company. Uh-huh. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck are you talking about. Oh no, because then
you of course on your show, can you?
And he yeah.
Fuck it, right on.
So he's explaining that only someone who works in a hotel ballroom five nights a week doing some other show here and there would understand the concept that everyone that comes in with a logo has an oval in it. So what does that mean? You know, how does this somehow, is it a trend? Is it the fact the same, what we were kind of talking about, how the metaphor of what people are trying to achieve in art is now somehow all just trending always forward.
Yeah.
And it sucks. It's like when you drive a car, you notice all the other cars like yours. It's the same thing. Now I see a company, I go, oh, it's an oval company. And people look at me like I'm crazy. And it's like, nope, this is it. And you will notice it too now.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a trend, right?
Yeah.
But what happens when it becomes something much bigger than a trend? You know what I mean? Where it becomes something that's actually so pervasive that it changes the actual environment around you, right?
Yes.
Where you're like, oh my God, like everything is this, right?
Yeah.
Because there are going to be things that just kind of crop up, right? Mm-hmm. There's new innovations, there's, you know, apps or you know, some like Photoshop gets a new filter or something. And then all of a sudden you see all that, right? And everybody's using the same tools, right?
This is a little different though.
But yeah, it goes a little bit, I think, beyond it.
Because society thinks somehow, a bunch of us, like 7 billion of us, we think somehow in different cultures, say Canadian culture versus American culture, we all kind of think a little bit the same.
Yeah.
And it's an age group that all sort of builds together and becomes this mass thought. And that's why we have stars like Justin Bieber, or we have pop stars, or we have the Rolling Stones, or the Beatles, or that's why we have these bands.
Yeah.
Because everybody, all at the same time, go, I love the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, it always happens.
Yeah.
There will be the next Nicki Minaj, or there'll be the next Ed Sheeran, they'll be the next. It always just happens, and it's because a common consciousness of people go, I like that.
Yeah.
Why do you like it? I don't know why I like it. It just do, because everybody's ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, in that.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lucky few who are able to tap into that, and you know, fair play to them. I've never been able to do it.
No, me neither.
But there's just, you know, I mean, just one of those things where it's like, if you're going to listen to that, you probably really don't really actually care about music. You like to have music, but you don't want to have a conversation with it.
No, that's true. You know, but it does. If someone likes Ed Sheeran, it might back them up to liking James Taylor, or it might, you know what I mean? It might back it into different directions.
Yeah.
But the idea of how the mass media now, like my son's all about hip hop. Mm-hmm. It drives me crazy. Like, I love my son, but I hate his music.
That's the way it's supposed to be.
It's the way, and that's why he plays it in his bedroom at 100 decibels.
Yeah.
Because it pisses me off.
That's right.
So he knows that. So it's like, that's his boundary.
Yeah.
That's his way of telling me, yeah, Dad, easy old man. Yeah. So I started coming in and going, knowing every word, that might freak him out. You know, he might, you know, turn into something else because he, you know. But there's so for me to, but that's what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
It's hip hop. And it's like the lyrics are just dumbed down. Like, I feel like we are getting dumber. Like, we as society, we're just getting dumber and dumber and dumber. I really do.
Because I think that media landscape, and whether it's television or music or whatever, like all that sort of content, right, does create an environment within which then how do you survive in that, right? I mean, we've all been watching TV for such a long time. It's super simple stuff. You don't have to think about it. So therefore, you kind of get out of the habit of thinking. You know?
Yes, and you don't
become dumber.
Yeah, right? Like I liked Three's Company, but that's the stupidest show on earth. You know what I mean? Like, but then again, that's Three's Company's all over the place now. You know what I mean? It's everywhere, and it's there's different versions of it.
I'll find myself binging on you know those TV shows where you got like you know Love It or List It or something like that.
Oh,
you know those things.
Oh yeah.
I'll watch like 10 of those shows.
Mindless.
Yeah, I'll just watch 10 in a row, man. And I'm just like,
veggie. The one with the guy from Las Vegas, like you'd always say, my guys.
Yeah.
He would always buy, you'd buy houses that were like bankrupt or something and then turn it into like a beautiful house in Las Vegas or something. That's to me, that I really feel that, yeah, maybe we shouldn't always be into super high art because that maybe turns us into.
No, like it's not a. So the magazine, the Wonderlit magazine, is more sort of about what we call lowbrow art, right? Mm-hmm. Versus highbrow, right? Although we've actually now melded them together and we just call it unibrow. but I think we're very used to classifying things and putting things into it, like and pushing them away and saying you're over there and you're over there and whatever like that. So it's fine to watch those things, but just be aware of the fact that it does create like an environment. That other people grow up in. So you become somebody who grew up with newspapers and then you buy a TV and then your kids grow up with newspapers and a TV.
Yeah.
And over time, they grow up, but they just kind of turn to TV.
Yeah.
So then newspapers are gone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got this generation that gets its information from TV and that's a certain kind of information,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's different from newspapers and it's different from radio. It's different from Facebook. Because now we have that. That's where you get your information from, or YouTube and how it's delivered. You know, so those kids then go off and they kind of build this world. And then somebody else grows up in that and then they get influenced by it. And that's what I'm talking about. You know, so, but like, I mean, there's still value to all of the content. It's not like, you know, those old days of whether, you know, like, I mean, if you listen to that, you're not my pal, but because you have to listen to this, right?
Yeah.
It's like, listen to everything, read everything. And that's like the cool thing about this bookshop is because, I mean, essentially, newspapers are dead, which is why I left the Toronto Star. And then I, you know, get into a bookshop, which is still print, which is supposed to be dead too. But people are still reading. And I think what it is that you can, like, the book still has some relevance. And I'm not, you know, and we have vinyl and stuff like that, obviously, too. So I'm not being, like, all super retro. But there's no Russian robot staring at me and, you know, looking at what I'm reading when
that's
I have
true.
A book. Right?
Yeah, that's true. There's something, it's very analog. You're absolutely
it's like it's no, you know, when I put my record on, nobody's out there checking on the data.
Unless
you
your
know?
Phone mic is open and the Russian's like, what is that new winter sleep I hear?
I mean, but that's the thing. It's so each media has its own sort of use after a while.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like one's gone and then it gets replaced. It becomes something else.
Yeah,
And that's the thing. So being in here right now at this point, I do think that being in a bookstore and reading books and digging back into the past and spending time offline, quiet, absorbing information, still educating yourself, and whether that's comic books or graphic novels or, you know, the classics, or you know, some local author writing. Like, it doesn't matter, as long as you're just in that your own private space for a time. Pardon me. I think that's a useful tool at the moment. It's a useful tool to deal with all this other, like, this madness that's happening throughout the world.
I have a psychologist on here sometimes, a few shows, and he says that you do need time to just sit and do nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with sitting and being in your own head and thinking about what your life is.
Yeah.
Who said that? You know what I mean? So, because we're always constantly attacked with not just like with billboards and pop-ups and you know, and the other creepy thing where you look, so I want to book a hotel somewhere, and then you're on Facebook and there's that hotel, like, what?
Yeah,
because you don't know what cookies mean until you have to read what the fuck are cookies. You know what I mean? Like, so the fact that you can sit there, and it's the kind of keys into what you just said, is that you just need to be with yourself to understand who you are for a second, because everybody tells you who you are all the time.
Yeah.
And you have this sort of false sense of who you might be, but it's only you who can determine who you are. You're the one that makes that decision.
Yeah. And if you do dig into it and you get all those other stories, it does sort of help you understand exactly what's happening. When I was teaching some of the McLuhan sort of theory stuff, and it wasn't supposed to, but I just came up in the classroom because I was doing history of media, and I was saying to the kids, like, I mean, that phone that you have in your hand, right? That mirror that you see yourself in, right? I said, you know, Lewis Carroll was writing about that way back with Alice in Wonderland, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've now passed through the looking glass, and we're all living on the other side, and we're in that chaotic world, you know, with the queen and her off, queen of hearts and off with their heads, and, you know, the walrus and the carpenter and, you know, the cat that disappears, and like all that madness, man, we're all in there, you know, at the moment. We've crossed over into that madness. And but then it's a case of, like, how did she get out? You know, so you need to read that to figure out how we're going to get out of this.
Yeah.
You know, because that's a possible tool.
Yeah.
And the same thing with music and you know, looking at paintings and art and, you know, poetry, and figuring out these things that have had relevance for a very, very long time, you know, especially the older way classics like the Odyssey and the Iliad and stuff like that. I mean, you read those, and they're still irrelevant, but there's also answers, you know, because all of us have, for whatever, 900,000 years, have all had questions, and people have come up with the answers, and they've documented them. And then, in, you know, there's ways of getting that information, and one of them is, you know, in a bookstore as well, you know? So that's what I mean. Like, I mean, go find it, and don't just turn around and say, I'm just going to watch an iPad. It's like, no, read a book.
Yeah.
Take some time to it.
All the lights will be turned out.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
They make TV shows on it.
They're coming.
They're coming. It's coming. It's coming.
It is coming, man.
They should do it maybe for 1 week to see what happens. Like, all the lights, everything switched off. Bam. See what happens. See what happens to society, just in case this is like a scratch test.
Well, what was that big, remember North America?
When we had the blackout.
The blackout, man?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was, I've never seen so many happy Torontonians in my entire life. Like, I'm walking by, because we were living in East York at the time, there's a guy come by in the darkness. Happy blackout is what he said. I'm like, hey, man, you would never say anything to me had all the lights been on. So,
and you know what?
We're closer together.
You could make a massive, you know, like best-selling movie about this potential disaster that would happen if all the lights went out, right? But the reality was, when they did go out, people actually knew how to behave. It was almost like, wow, this is essentially who we are. You know, it's, light has only been around for, you know, a couple hundred years, if that.
Yeah, totally.
So before that, it was darkness. And there was no electricity. So it was fire, you know? That's kind of, you know, and that maybe, I don't know if there's some sort of like weird cultural sort of DNA as well as like physical DNA, where you just kind of like, you go back and you go, oh, that's right. Like your ancestors are all talking to you saying, this is what you do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The lights go out. I know what it's like. Don't be afraid.
But if they did it as sort of
strike
like
up even the barbecue
phones and everything, because I mean, if it happened tomorrow, we'd all be connected. I'd be texting you, hey man, what's up with your phone? Everything working okay? Yeah. You got battery for your phone? Yes, you know, but I think it was a different time. When did that happen? It was early 2000s.
Like
maybe even like 2002, maybe?
I don't know, man.
It wasn't
there was some
like,
anniversary. Was it like 10 years ago or something like that?
Something
maybe it was 2003.
Like
I can't remember.
It was a situation that
yeah.
that there was like, it's a different time now. But they should do it everywhere, all the time. We try to do Earth Day, where everybody switches their lights up, but nobody does that.
Yeah, see, man, but we got to be punk rock.
Yeah.
We can't be waiting for, you know, other people to do this stuff. We just do it ourselves,
Germany
doesn't.
Germany switches out their streetlights.
Wow, see?
And you walk around, you come outside, and you're like, all the streetlights are out, and you're like, what happened? What did I miss? And people go by, and you're like, oh, my God, there's no lights on. It's pitch black.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we just got to catch up.
Well, we're out in the country here now, man. Have you driven down Reach Road?
I know. Black. It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
Well, hey, man, I always enjoy speaking with you.
Oh, thank you, man.
Do.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
I like I said, all the things you've done over the past, what, 3 years, 2 years? It's very...
I've done a lot, man. It's actually been 30-odd years now.
Change. Yeah. I know. But just even the past five, it seems like a lot of things in your life have sort of fallen into place and or, you know what I mean, been rebuilt. Yeah. And it's really inspiring to folks, you know.
Thanks,
and I
man.
Appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah. No worries. Well, I think that everybody should be listening to Simon Hedges. Apologue. Apologue. Yeah, apologue. I can never pronounce it all the time. Right. Here, let's do a call for Simon. No, thanks, man. It's good. And y'all should come up to my bookstore and hang out, by the way.
That's right.
We're going to do this podcast from here every time now.
And that was Mr. Will McGurk of Blue Huron Books. They're in Oxford. So come on up and buy a book. Read a book and get smart. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. I'm going to keep the outro short. I am not feeling well. I have the flu, and I'm trying to get through today. It's been a long, long day at work, and trying to get through it so I can go to bed. So thanks, everybody, for shopping on Amazon, supporting the show. Thanks for going and buying T-shirts, and thank you for being a patron. Thank you. Next week is going to be episode number 200, and I don't really have anything planned for it, but let's see what happens. I have two feelers out right now that I'm trying to wrangle in, so you can stand by, and if I don't get to it, I might wait a week, so if I get it, then I really could, because there's two prospective guests I have that I really want to be on the show. One person is a little hard to get a hold of, and the other person is a little hard to get a hold of. So, as you can see, they're a little hard to get a hold of. So, be patient, everybody. It's a busy time of the year for me, and I appreciate everyone listening to the show. And, no, I'm not canceling the show. I'm not going to be going away. I just get busy, and I'm going to try to put a little bit more effort into the fall, because it seems like a better time to do a podcast in the fall. The summer's been busy. So anyways, see you next week. If I don't see you next week, I'll see you the week after. And keep on keeping on.